Very glad to be able to share with you some things that I've studied that were, some of these things are quite new to me as far as the information that I've gleaned. I've enjoyed doing the research that I have. It's not a biblical topic, but rather it's a historical topic of the eschatology of 19th century gospel preachers. And I limit this just to the 19th century, even though it says to the restoration movement, because it begins to take many different paths after the 19th century. But we're going to talk about eschatology. For those of you that are not familiar with this term, it's simply, what do people think about the end of time? What does the Bible teach about the end of time? Eschatology is dealing with end things. And when I'm done, why, that will be the eschatology of my talk. But the eschatology in America is different than it was even in Europe. As eschatology was beginning to wane in Europe, it was on the increase or the rise in America. There were a number of factors that contributed to this, and three factors here on this continent that made great impact on the thinking of people was the French and Indian War, the American Revolution, and the French Revolution. And I'll talk just for a little while about the social events so that we can see what it was that was going on in society that influenced men like Walter Scott, Alexander Campbell, and others that were a part of the Restoration Movement. Even though men like Campbell and Scott were calling for, you know, a return to what does the Bible teach, we have to recognize these men did not live in a vacuum, and they were influenced by the society that they lived in and the talk that was going on. Now, the events that I mentioned occurred prior to the Restoration Movement, as we're talking about. The French and Indian War was in 1754. And yet, because of the influence of the Puritans in New England and their desire to get back to living a moral and righteous life and to living a life that was close to what the Word of God taught, there was lots of reflection on Jesus Christ coming again. And people were getting their lives prepared for that very event. And when the French and Indian War occurred, there was lots of rhetoric that was going on about this could be the sign or the signal of the end of the world. People living in North America had already conjured in their mind, or they believed in their hearts, that America was the center of the what Jesus Christ had in mind for the end of time, and that what was going on here was going to be of a far greater impact than any place else in the world. In fact, people that lived in North America believed that this was the millennial state, and it was going to begin right here. There were events that occurred that, besides the French and Indian War, that only fueled the idea that the end must be very near. There were wildfires, and there were comets that appeared that people didn't understand, and they believed that these were the signs of the end of time. So there was much talk that was going on concerning the book of Revelation and the things that were written therein. And in every religious community, in every religious circle, people were talking about the end of the world and what was going to occur and how that it was going to occur and the things that would be brought about when Jesus Christ would come again, or things that were going to occur. Well, of course, after the French and Indian War occurred and the end did not come, following on that was the American Revolution. And the American Revolution had a little bit different impact. It was a different type of millennialism, we should say, than was the French and Indian War, in that it was more politicized. And people were talking about the idea that if one would fight for America, fight for freedom here on this land, in this country, that he would usher in the millennium. But if the British were to prevail, then the Antichrist would win. They looked at the British government as being the symbol of the Antichrist. And so people were then torn between the idea, do we fight for freedom here and usher in the millennium, or do we yield ourselves to the Antichrist? Now, the different religious leaders that were preaching during the late 18th century, surely some of them were going to be right on things that they predicted. Just one example is that we find that Jonathan Edwards had posited that if the British were to win in the French and Indian War, then that would be a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Aaron Burr, Sr., not the one that was the vice president, who was a preacher in New Jersey, said that if the French would win, that would be the fulfillment of what the scriptures were teaching. So obviously, you know, one of these men was going to be correct and the other was going to be incorrect as far as society was concerned. Well, this fervor that was going on in North America was causing people to always ask the question, when will the end of time be? And there was much reading of the book of Revelation. There was much talk about Matthew chapter 24 and the things that are written therein. There was lots of discussion going on in religious circles about the end of time. And then we find that the French Revolution occurred. And when the French Revolution occurred, although it wasn't going on here in North America, it caught the attention of the people that were here, because it looked as if that Americans believed that the man of sin was the papacy, was the Pope, and they believed that the French resistance to Roman Catholic religion was a fulfillment of what was being written within the book of Revelation. And so they watched with great interest. Many sermons were being preached in regard to what was going on, and this surely was a fulfillment of Bible prophecy, and that the end was soon to come. Jesus Christ would soon appear. The man of sin was going to be dethroned, was going to be taken out of power, and Jesus would come, set up his kingdom, and rule here on the face of this earth. Well, all of that I've talked about sets for us the social atmosphere of when Alexander Campbell came to America. And we mentioned him coming to America. Of course, Thomas Campbell also made the trip here. Walter Scott came to America. These men came to America at a time when people were talking about the end of the world, talking about the end of time, the second coming of Jesus Christ. And regardless of what the purpose was of Walter Scott, of Alexander Campbell, Thomas Campbell, when they talked about the unity of Christianity, when they talked about going back to restore the ancient faith, they had to deal with questions the people had about, when will Jesus Christ appear again? When will he come? We want to know, because that was on the minds of people that were interested in religion, if you were going to tell people about salvation, you also had to tell people about when will Jesus Christ come again. Well, let's talk about for just a little while then what these men believed and what it is that prompted them to take the positions that they did. And I want to talk second, we've talked about the social atmosphere that was there. Let's talk about those that would have had influence on the thinking of men like Campbell and Scott, and both Campbells, as they were thinking about when will Jesus Christ come again. They read books the same as we read books also. They studied what other religious scholars had to say also. If you go to Bethany and you visit the home of Alexander Campbell, you can go into a room in the college that is there, and you can see the Campbell Library, and you can see the books that Alexander Campbell referenced and read. He studied each day within his own little eight-sided study that was outside of his home, standing there reading not only the Bible, but various works that were written by religious scholars so that he could formulate what does the Bible teach about various things. Well, some of those scholars that he would have read, one would have been Bengel, Johann Bengel, who was a scholar that lived from 1687 to 1752. He was a Lutheran priest, but he wrote a commentary, Bengel's New Testament, and in his studies that he had, Bengel meticulously studied the Bible, and it led him to believe that the dates and time periods were related. That is, the things that he was putting together within the scriptures. He says all the way through from Genesis to Revelation, bringing him to this conclusion in his commentary that June the 18th in 1836, that would be the start of the millennium. And it would include the fall of the Antichrist, which he believed was the Roman Catholic Church. It would bring about the conversion of the Jews and the reign of Jesus Christ for 1,000 years, as is promised in Revelation chapter 20. We find John Wesley in his outlines on the book of Revelation. He said that the first millennium was going to be something that would occur in A.D. 1836. Wesley may have been a student of Bengel, not exactly sure about that, but he believed that this would be the fulfilling of the Word of God, of the mystery of God, and that the repentance of the Jewish survivors would occur, and the end of the little time that is mentioned in Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12, and of the three times and a half mentioned in verse 14 of that chapter. He believed that in this year, in 1836, we would see the destruction of the beast, the imprisonment of Satan. All of this would occur. And afterward, then, according to Wesley's notes, he said in the year 2836, there would be a second millennium. There would be the loosing of Satan for a small time, the beginning of 1,000-year reign of the saints, and the end of the small time. That's all recorded in his notes in chapter 20, verses 4 through 10. And Wesley then postulated that the end of the world, which would include the second coming of Jesus Christ, would occur in 38:36. Now, he wasn't the only one that extended things out that far, but these were men, by the way, that Alexander Campbell and Walter Scott both would have been familiar with. They would have certainly read their works and known what their views were. An individual that had been one of the greatest theologians and philosophers in America is Jonathan Edwards. He lived long before the time of Alexander Campbell. He was born in 1703, died in 1758. But Jonathan Edwards had a great influence on American thinking. That is, the religious thinking of people within America. And he is credited as being, an individual that was an heir to the amillennial views of Augustine and Calvin. He was an individual that saw the millennium as a literal historical reality, which was the goal towards which history had been moving since the very fall of Adam. He thought it probable that this latter-day glory would begin in America. In fact, the fact is, Jonathan Edwards is sometimes credited as being an instigator of the American Revolution. I find that a little bit, far-reaching or far-fetched, as one might say, but he was an individual that certainly contributed to the thinking of American people in the American Revolution. And he interpreted the second coming of Jesus Christ, or I should say the millennium, as it would be, as being approximately 1,260 years after the year 606 A.D., when the Bishop of Rome was recognized as having universal authority. And thus, the millennium, he was teaching people, was something that was imminent. That is, it was going to occur sometime within the next century of the life that he was living. And he taught that at this time, the kingdom of the Antichrist would be utterly overthrown, and that there would be a national conversion of the Jews. And following the millennium, there would come a period of great apostasy and tribulation, which would be superseded by the personal second coming of Jesus Christ. And the saints then would be gathered under their head forever to be in his presence, and the wicked would be summoned before the judgment seat of Christ. I feel very confident that both Alexander Campbell and Walter Scott were familiar with the teaching of Jonathan Edwards. Well, there were individuals also that were contemporary with Alexander Campbell. Let's look at some of the things that were going on in his day. We have this man, William Lynn, who was using numbers to associate certain figures with the Antichrist. And in his pamphlet, Discourses on the Signs of the Times, William Lynn attempted to show that the Catholic Church was the Antichrist. He used the Greek word Latinos and the Hebrew word Romith, claiming that they referred to the Catholic Church. And by applying the value of these, the letter and the numerical value, he discovered that both of these words measured up or added up to the number of the beast, 666. Also, there was another contemporary of Alexander Campbell, who was William Miller. And William Miller was an American Baptist preacher who's credited with beginning a movement called Millerism. He's actually the forefather of what is today the modern Seventh-day Adventist Church. But using his calculations, and this was during the very time that Campbell was writing his Christian Baptist paper and then turning to the Millennial Harbinger, we find that William Miller assumed that there was 2,300 days and the sanctuary would be cleansed, and he said that this cleansing of the sanctuary represented earth's purification by fire at Christ's second coming. And he believed that it would occur March 21st, 1843. And then he changed the date to March 21st, 1844. And of course, he was wrong in both of those. Later, there was a date of in October 1844, and that also failed. Samuel Snow was the one that was the lieutenant of William Miller, and he presented the message that said it would be October 22nd, 1844. And this was based on the calendar of the Karaite Jews instead of the calendar that had been used by William Miller. Now, these are spiritual influences that were going on in Campbell's day and in Scott's day. They were familiar with what was going on. And there were men also that Campbell had great respect for. In fact, he mentions them in some of his writings. Francis Whalen, who was an American Baptist minister, educator, and economist, he was the president of Brown University. And notice here, this is a quote from him. He says, "Perhaps before the youth of this generation be gathered to their fathers, there may burst forth upon these highly favored states the light of the millennial glory. What is to prevent it? Let any man reflect upon the subject and then answer. My brethren, I speak deliberately. I do not believe that the option is put into our hands. The church has for 2,000 years been praying, 'Thy kingdom come.' Jesus Christ is saying unto us, 'It shall come if you desire it.'" This man was, he wasn't some sort of a fanatical quack, but he was a respected religious scholar in his day. And of course, across the ocean, you had Charles Spurgeon, who is perhaps the greatest Baptist preacher that has ever been on the face of the earth. And he writes this in his Justification and Glory. He says, "If I read the word aright, and it's honest to admit that there's much room for difference of opinion here, the day will come when the Lord Jesus will descend from heaven with a shout, with the trump of the archangel and the voice of God. Some think that this descent of the Lord will be post-millennial, that is, after the 1,000 years of his reign. I cannot think so. I conceive the advent will be premillennial, that he will come first." Well, we'll stop right there with what the outside influence would have, and let's look at what these men actually have to say. Walter Scott, I believe, was perhaps the moving influence of the Restoration Movement. He was the one that was out working in the field as an evangelist. He was the one that was teaching people the gospel plan of salvation. And certainly, Walter Scott was a very great scholar. There's no question about that. In my mind, he may have been a far greater Bible student than even Alexander Campbell was. And just a couple of quotations from Walter Scott. He says, "This is the millennial," talking about the age that he was living in the 1800s. He wrote this in 1826. It was an article that was under the title of Philip, and if you're reading in the Christian Baptist, when you see an article that is that the author is Philip, that's really Walter Scott. He says, "This is the millennial or the evangelical age of the world, during which the human race will enjoy great happiness and the third order of relations which have been revealed as subsisting between men and their Creator and Redeemer. They shall be fully investigated, developed, and enjoyed." Another thought that can be put before us, Walter Scott had been sent into the northern part of Ohio, which was the Western Reserve, as it was referred to in that day and time, to work as an evangelist. And when he went there, He went under the direction of the Mahoning Association. This was the association that Alexander Campbell and his father Thomas Campbell had joined before they broke away from the Baptist Church. And from 1825 to 1827, the minutes of the Mahoning Association showed that on the average, the average congregation of the Baptist churches, they were converting one person a year, or perhaps one family if it was a husband and wife that were coming in. They averaged, though, just one baptism per year. After Walter Scott had been in the field for 1 year, this was in 1828, there were over 1,000 baptisms that were reported for these congregations. Several new congregations were started, organized, and there were many outstanding people. Now, when I say outstanding people, I'm talking about people that were well-known in society, men that were political leaders, men that were wealthy, men that were movers within the American society. And Walter Scott was converting these people, and they were being added to the movement. Is it any wonder then that men like Scott and Campbell began talking in terms of a coming millennium? Because they were seeing growth that was astronomical to them. To go from one baptism in a congregation, and you had a circuit of maybe 10 or 12 churches that Scott was serving. You had 10 or 12 people being baptized per year. And Scott goes, and in 1 year, he baptizes more than 1,000 people. That would cause folks to think something good is happening right here. Well, Alexander Campbell said this. He says, I know it is said that all these things will be brought right when millennium shall come. I reply that it will be by the correction of these errors that the millennial day will be ushered in. He wrote this in the Christian Baptist in Volume 3, Number 1. Campbell's view was this. That is, the religious people that he had any type of association with, which were Presbyterians and Baptists, they were saying to him that when Jesus Christ comes again, then denominational divisions will be ended, and then everybody will come together into one body. Then there will be unity, and the second coming of Christ will bring peace and harmony among God's people. Campbell, in this quotation, is saying, no, you have it backwards. He says, we need to first have unity, and we need to agree on what the Bible teaches. And if we do that, he says, then Jesus will come again because we've succeeded at what he wants. Well, there's a number of things that he wrote. Of course, he was a prolific writer for many years, wrote in the Christian Baptist and then later in the Millennial Harbinger. And I couldn't tell you all of the things that he said in regard to what he thought about the millennium. But he did say this: mankind are certainly moving in the horizon of some great and eventful change, into the center of which all society must inevitably and speedily be carried. The world is in strange commotion. Expectation is all aroused. Anticipation of something good, splendid, and unknown is become undoubting and impatient, even to painfulness. And the time is at hand when a plenteous harvest of toil and talent must be reaped from all orders of society, that many may run to and fro and knowledge be increased. Campbell believed that if people knew more of what the Bible taught, that would expedite the second coming of Jesus Christ. Thus, he wrote and sent papers out. He started a college, educated men, and encouraged education and learning, believing that the college that he had at Bethany and the paper that he was publishing called the Millennial Harbinger would turn the world back to Jesus Christ, which in turn would bring the coming of Jesus into this world, would bring the end of the world. So the Christian Baptist, he edited from 1823 to 1830. And of course then he had the Millennial Harbinger, which began in 1830 and continued to edit until his death in 1866. Now, both Campbell and Scott, from their writings, are what we call postmillennial. That is, they believe that the world was going to turn to Jesus, and then Jesus would come again. They believed there was going to be a period of peace and prosperity in which there would be no wars. There would be no sin that was going on. But, you know, everybody was going to flock into the church of Jesus Christ. And that then after the world was living in some sort of utopia, Jesus would come again. The Civil War, of course, came about, and played a great havoc on the thinking of the Restoration Movement. Obviously, the teaching of Walter Scott and of Alexander Campbell had some flaws in it, and peace was not coming to the earth. Instead, there was hostility that was coming. The church was divided because of the Civil War, and there was not an abatement of sin, but rather there was an increase of sin that was going on. There was hatred. There was murder that was going on, and people were living lives that were less religious than what they had been a generation earlier. Well, I think the man that probably had one of the greatest influences on the 19th century and probably the 20th century as far as eschatology is concerned is this man right here, B.W. Johnson. And B.W. Johnson, who lived from 1833 to 1894, he wrote a book called The Vision of the Ages. He also wrote a book called The People's New Testament. The notes that are found in the People's New Testament on the book of Revelation are found also in The Vision of the Ages. It's simply a commentary on eschatology, on the things that B.W. Johnson believed was going to occur at the end of time. Many of us that are older preachers, we grew up reading The Vision of the Ages, and we learned the views of this man, which were referred to as being continuous historical interpretation of the book of Revelation. Some people still hold to the views that B.W. Johnson did, and some have moved on to other views because that continuous historical view that Johnson presented in the 1800s seems to be flawed in some way. But here's what he says in his book, in The Vision of the Ages, on Revelation chapter 20 and in verse 4. He says, 1,000 years... I am not prepared to say that this blessed period shall be limited to 1,000 years, but am rather disposed to believe that 1,000 years, a round period of great duration, is chosen to show to the longing student of the prophets that there shall be a long, long period of righteousness upon the same earth that has been reddened with blood, filled with crime, and made foul by sin. The characteristics of this golden period of the human race are clearly pointed out by the prophets. Well, he just has a variation of postmillennialism, and yet that is the view, or his commentary has been one that has been used even until recent times when people are talking about the eschatology. Now, there were other writers that had some views. Change was occurring, certainly in the second half of the 19th century, as men saw that the views of Walter Scott and Alexander Campbell needed some modification. J.W. McGarvey's brother-in-law, Hiram Christopher, who wrote a book entitled The Remedial System, had an interesting view, and I mentioned this because I remember reading the book years ago. It was one that had been held up as being a great book to me by some brethren when I first started preaching. And I read this and I thought, this is, you know, absurd. But he believed that when Jesus Christ would come again, he would reign here on the face of this earth, but he believed there would be 365,000 years that would be of peace and prosperity here on the earth, taking the day for a year thing in some strange way. These men had ways of doing that. And I read that and I thought, well, I'm going to throw that out. Another book that I read, an individual that was not well known, but he was part of the restoration movement. His name was Carr, K-E-R-R, if I'm saying his name properly. And he wrote a book in regard to eschatology and said that Jesus Christ was going to come again. I believe it was 2003. He lived in the 19th century. I read the book. I owned the book. And I read the book in the 1980s, and I put it back on a shelf, and I thought, I need to sell this book before the year 2003. It's worth more then than it will be afterward, but I failed to do so. So it's a part of my collection of books that were false prophecy. Those are the views of the restoration preachers, the restoration movement in the 19th century. I'll open this up to anyone that has questions.